the outstanding John Crispin. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, man, look, I am so sorry for missing the show last week. I'm usually a better communicator, but I actually get very calm when handling flight cancellations and bag losses. The problem is I forget about everything else in the world. And so my wife also fell victim to this. She thought I was on a plane. She sees me in Minneapolis and says, are you okay? Weren't you supposed to fly out? And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry, babe. I'm stuck here for a little while. So you're in the same category as my wife, if that helps.
Yeah, feeling a lot better. All right. Today is whatever anniversary of what Penn State upsetting Illinois, you said earlier, and Titus Ivory had 27 points. So I went through a litany of what I thought of Titus Ivory. You
yep.
played side by side, shared a locker room with Titus Ivory for a couple of years. Tell everybody what kind of guy we're talking about as a player and a person.
Well, let me start with this. He's a Penn State guy. My brother Joe and I talk about this all the time. Like, people think you have to get the greatest talent to win at this level. And I always say, well, define great talent, because I think Titus was pretty good. I think Jared Stevens was pretty good.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I think my brother was pretty darn good. But the
yep.
thing was, they all check the box of being a Penn State guy. And then you say, all right, how do you define being a Penn State guy? And you say, you only know if you know. And I think that's the
yeah.
greatest compliment I can give Titus Ivory, because he represented a community that we love, a community that felt like a family, a community that still feels like a family. And Titus was one of the best teammates I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, he knew how to push us. He fouled the heck out of me in practice my freshman year.
Yes, he did.
And he said he was teaching me how to play in the Big Ten. And all he taught me how to do was push back harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he was one of those guys. He was genuine. He was sincere. He was inspiring with all the little things he did. And he was motivating with the things that he did on the surface. And I just think we get so consumed with what it takes to win at this level. And I say, well, it takes a few Titus Ivories. It takes a few Tyler Smiths. Did I mention any NBA superstars? No, I didn't. I mentioned guys that are willing to do all the little things. And look, success is merely a byproduct of doing a lot of little things right for the right reasons. That's Titus Ivory. So I can't say enough about the guy. I mean, look, I think Sharif Chambliss, who I just saw a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
was similar in the sense where he's just
yep.
genuine, sincere dude who makes everybody around them better, even when we're bowling. Do you get what
yeah.
I'm saying? Like, it's
yep.
not about the basketball court. It's about everything around it. It's about the family you create. And, you know, to go back, that is as much of a pain in the butt as I was to our good friend Jerry Dunn. I was a child.
So
we can just go with that. I think the 41-year-old version of me would have handled it better.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go through being a 19, 20-year-old to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jerry was a big part of that. You know, Jerry built a family atmosphere, and I think that's something that Shrews is trying to do. And part of that process is just get to know where you're at. It's hard. The world has changed. We live in a global world, so we think we have to compete and be like everybody else. We have to assimilate in so many ways. But the reality is, Penn State's different. And the sooner you learn that, the sooner you get to success. The sooner you start finding more Titus Ivories out there.
I think that, as you said, it's one of those that, when you see it and you're part of it, you know it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And I think we criticize people. We say, oh, you're in a bubble. And I'm like, sort of. It's a pretty darn big bubble. You
yeah.
know what I mean? There's bubbles within the bubbles, and that's understood. But the bubbles within the bubbles never do as well. You know, you really have to understand you represent something. You are there to inspire something that is so much bigger than just Penn State basketball. And frankly, it's bigger than just State College. It's an alumni base that has a genuine interest in seeing something be successful. And I think that was, I hope it's something they can get back to, because it's special beyond wins and losses.
Yeah, they're getting there.
Yep.
And Shrews is a big reason why. So when you now watch Micah Shrewsbury's style as a head coach, and obviously you know, you've seen, you know, with Matt Painter and so forth, what he's
mm-hmm.
done, what are you seeing with it just stylistically as a foundation?
Well, that's the word, right? I think we get thinking that we want to see this drastic change, and it happens overnight. The reality is, if it happens overnight, it isn't sustainable. So what he's doing right now is building those foundational principles, and it's not based on personnel. I think we think, oh, let's see how he can recruit. Like, I don't care how you can recruit. I don't care what numbers a kid has next to his name. If he's the right guy, then it's going to work. if you find good fit guys, it's going to work so long as your foundational principles are what you adhere to. So what he's doing really right now is instilling foundational principles that allow you to be successful but also sustainable. And the sustainability part is probably the most important piece, because that's what recruits itself. When you have a sustainable level of success and you can show a pathway to success in the Big Ten based on simple principles that are tried and true, man, it's not anything. The game is different, but there are a lot of things that still have to be adhered to. He's working on those things. So I think the patience that you have to show is focus on that process, right? I don't want to say trust the process, because I think everything is a narrative and it's all rhetoric these days. But the reality is you have to step back and say, all right, what are we building? And you can see it. You can see it's not building with personnel. The personnel comes after these foundational principles are instilled. And I think that's what gives me the most hope for the program right now. But the secondary part of that is Micah Shrewsbury loves where he's at.
Yeah.
Every time I see him, I ask him about his family, because to me, that's the most important piece of being successful at Penn State. If your family gets connected with the local community and you feel a part of that community, you feel included in youth sports and all these things, you realize you're just another person, but you're someone that they want to root for. Yeah, and I think that's what he's really doing. And those are foundational things that allow you to be successful and sustainable. And then again, the recruiting piece, we talk so much, Steve, about how hard it is to recruit. And my answer is, well, yeah, it's hard to recruit the top 50 kids in the country. It's also expensive.
Yeah.
But you don't need them. You know, that's not what college basketball is all about. That's not what Penn State's all about. If you get them, great. But that's not what's going to make you win, and that's not what makes you a continued winner. So I think they're building the right way. I have all the hope in the world for what Shrews is doing.
Yeah, no, same here. So it's interesting, in college football, you feel like there's more influence of how college football is influencing how they play in the NFL. That's in part because of the quarterbacks. Yep. But in college basketball, it's the way the NBA is playing that I think is influencing college, which is a heavy emphasis on three layups, free throws. Now, Shrews, you know, there's a lot of things in there, but he, you know, believe me, you have an open two, you take an open two. That's part of it. What are you seeing that across the country, and what in terms of the games you're seeing up close? And if so, what do you think of it?
I think I see it on the surface, but I don't see it at the core. And somewhere in between is a disconnect. And the disconnect ultimately to me, because I'm probably more of a philosopher than I am an analyst. I mean, I love Lenardi's book on bracketology, but right now I'm into Kant's groundwork for the metaphysics of morals, because it tells me more about people.
Right.
And I think we're at a point where you need to understand people and motivations. The reason why it looks like the NBA on the surface is because that's where everybody wants to go.
Right.
And in so many ways, coaches have to show that they can create a pathway to the NBA by being a part of your program. But the reality is the game's different. Right? Skill is different. Feel is different. You have to, as a coach today, you have to create an environment in practice and in games that facilitate the development of feel. It's not there. Kids play AAU, and it is haphazard at best. I mean, no offense to Memphis, but it looks like Memphis.
Right.
You know, where it is just a bunch of guys, you roll the balls out, and you go play. That doesn't work. You know, you have to show that you're willing to play that style, that three and dunk and get to the foul line, get downhill style.
Yep.
I always say it used to be inside out, now it's outside in.
Right.
You get outside in to get inside out, right? It's the drive and kick style. Mm-hmm. The difference between the NBA ultimately is the rules. The rules are different.
Right.
The paint's wide open because it has to be.
Yep.
You know, by rule. I think we're closer to the European game, and I think the teams that figure that out and look at the European action, the way Europeans use ball screens, because the rotations defensively are different. There's someone in the paint. So you have to study the rotations of European professionals, guys that do have feel. They have feel because they don't have the same skill and they don't have the same athleticism as the guys in the NBA and, quite frankly, some of the guys in college basketball. So they have a much better feel and understanding for how to play the game and less wins because they know how to play. So I think there are teams out there that have realized that the game is more European and international than it is NBA. Yet on the surface, we like to say it's NBA because that's what the kids want.
Right.
So I think the best guys out there, no one likes the term manipulate, but I think the best coaches out there manipulate a lot. I think they manipulate the game, and maybe it's more on the side of influence. They manipulate players to play a certain way based on their motivations, right? The John Wooden pyramid was 2D.
Right.
The pyramid I see today is 3D. It's got four sides. Mm-hmm. Everybody has different motivations, but the goal is to get everybody working towards the top. Doesn't matter how you get there. Doesn't matter what motivates you to do the things that you do. You have to speak to their individual motivations. The hope is that common goal keeps us on, you know, keeps us on path and gives us the chemistry we need. I think the game has gotten challenging, man. It's hard. I think you see the personalities. It's tough. The influences outside of the court. It's tough. But you have to show that NBA game on the surface, when in reality there's still a control aspect of college basketball, partially because if I'm really being real and, you know, psychological with this, the coaches are the highest paid guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think where you'll see the change is some of these big NIL schools where the players are making more money than the coaches. That's where you're really going to start to see maybe the training wheels get kicked off a little bit more and the freedom goes to the player.
Yeah. Which is interesting. In watching the Big Ten this year, a guy like Jaden Ivey sticks out to me, and the Branham kid from Ohio State sticks out to me. Why? Because of their athleticism. I know the Big Ten is called in a certain way, and the big man exists in the Big Ten, but I think when they get to the national tournament, it's the maybe good athletes versus better athletes, and I think that's where they may run into a wall.
Yeah, but doesn't it feel like football?
Yeah.
I mean, where you start to say, you know, SEC athletes, SEC athletes, the game is just faster. I think that's what's been holding the Big Ten back. You know, we talk about it every year. And look, you know my brother. If my brother had his way, he'd score 190 points.
I know
that. You know what I mean? Like, it's play fast. And the reality is you don't have to be the greatest athlete to play fast. I think the freedom of movement component needs to be controlled. You know, the physicality needs to be consistent with what you'll see in postseason play. I think the advantage Purdue has right now is the fact that they're playing to score.
Yeah.
The vulnerability is that they're not the defensive team that they used to be. Now, that's something that they can correct. But the fact that they're able to get up and down the floor and score with anyone, I think it gives them an advantage in the NCAA tournament, whereas most teams typically, you have to compete in the Big Ten, which means you have to adapt to the conference. Brad Underwood did it.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to play fast up and down the floor. Then they're like, we can't do that without a big. Let's get Kofi Coburn in here. We got Kofi Coburn. And now you adjust to your personnel because your personnel gives you the best chance to win in the Big Ten.
Okay.
I think you've got to balance the two. I think Purdue is right now on another level where they're able to score with anybody in the country, and they need to clean up their defense, which is clearly something they can do.
Right. Well, this is what they also need to do. They also have to have the killer instinct in close. Because what's happened to them in the last 6-7 minutes of games, Penn State took the lead with them with 3 minutes to go here. But that's not atypical of what's happened with Purdue. They'll be going along, and then boom, somebody catches them. And Ohio State tied them yesterday after being down 18.
So the question is why, right?
Yeah.
The coach would say, all right, well, why? What is it? Well,
if you play through
two bigs.
Right.
So end of game situation, who's your guy? It needs to be Jaden Ivey, and they haven't really established that yet because he's just a piece. He's one of the greatest pieces in the country. I think he's one of the top 10, top 15 players out there, but that's not who they are. So they're going to have to adapt to that and find that guy down the stretch where you can run sets, you can run action that gets Jaden Ivey free, and he becomes your guy. Because, again, we had the luxury of Joe Crispin, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had the luxury of Joe Crispin. We knew who was going to have the ball in late-game situations. He might not shoot it, although 9 times out of 10 he is, let's be honest. He might not shoot it, but we knew who had the ball.
Right.
And they haven't figured that out yet because it can't be your bigs who you've been playing to the whole game.
And yesterday, who hit the three to win it?
Jaden Ivey.
Case closed.
There you go.
And so is this interview. It's always great to talk with you, my friend. Appreciate you very much.
My pleasure, man. Hey, anytime, unless flights get canceled and I just lose sight of human beings. So my apologies again.
I don't even think twice about it. It's me, for goodness sakes. You know that. You know that. It's me. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man. No, you deserve better. You've made a lot of my bad performances sound good.
Hey, 73-69, yet 26. I'll never forget that. All right.
I'll take it.
In Rupp. Thanks, buddy.
That's right.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care, Steve.